Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. And once again, a big thank you to Rabbi Ilana Foss for joining us for a couple of moments this evening. And now we move forward to our new and improved red versus blue. Of course, for the blue side of things, we have County Treasurer Tom O'Brien is here. For the red side of things, we have Craig Pina, who is... Now, I'm not sure if this is accurate or not, but I thought you were... Are you still the Republican City Committee Chair?
Former City Committee Chair.
Former.
Current Ward 1 Chair. And for the Republican City Committee.
Right? Okay. And General Grand Poobah. Kevin, I want to know, how come it's not blue versus red?
Because red's better.
Is that right? Because alphabetically...
It flows.
That doesn't make sense. Does it flow?
It flows out the tongue better.
And did you set us up because the rabbi was talking about Sodom and Gomorrah, and then you have Craig and I on.
I mean... You know, I tried sneaking that by him.
I was not successful. What kind of a segue is that?
Well, I think if you watched the political campaigns, all the commercials in the last month or so, you saw lots of Sodom and Gomorrah.
Absolutely. Those were horrible.
I just think it's time to end negative campaigning. Most of the people who relied on negative campaigning lost, and I think it should send a message to people. If you want to go negative, do it at your own risk.
Well, you know, Craig, do you think one of the things we can do about that is tackle the problems presented by Citizens United?
But we could, yeah.
I mean, I really think one of my frustrations as an elected official is the impact that Citizens United has had on all the races. It strikes me that since the passage of that, or since the Supreme Court made that decision, campaigns have gotten even nastier because you now have groups that are unaccountable. And they can say what they want.
It's the dark money.
It's the dark money, yeah, the dark pools. And until we eliminate that, I think we're going to just see it get worse.
Well, let's kind of bring things back down at least to the South Shore, the local level first, before we talk about that. Because one of the conversation that we had during some of the forums we had here was about having a PAC like Mass Fiscal Alliance putting out flyers and mailers for certain candidates. And I think it's possible that Some of what they did might have had an effect on a couple of races. Would you guys agree or disagree to that?
Well, I can tell you, having talked to a lot of the folks that were the subject of the flyers, and even some that would be presumed to be the beneficiary of the flyers, that many of them were frustrated because the group was unidentifiable, and they were claiming some level of independence, but as we now know factually, they only targeted 20 Democrats. So it's clearly not an independent group by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. They spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, and to this date, we still don't know who the contributors of those groups were. So how frustrating is that?
And one of the most frustrating things is for a campaign is you spend a lot of time and effort and money trying to get a certain message out, and then you have this outside group coming in and changing, trying to change the whole message, and whether you're the target of the negative ad or you're supposedly the beneficiary. If you're the beneficiary, you could look bad. If you're the target, it could really affect your camp. So it's not a good thing all the way around.
Yeah, because I noticed that actually a lot of the campaigns, at least on the South Shore, that were supposedly benefiting from these negative attacks were trying to run positive campaigns, and then they had these attacks come in, and it made it look all skewed and negative, and they had no choice. I mean, they were going to send out, this PAC was going to send those attacks out whether they wanted them or not.
Well, what's interesting in you say that, and I think it's a good point, but they have no choice. They could at some point disavow those PACs.
That's true.
And I
that
didn't see what I was surprised at, had it been me and I was the those PACs were sending out negative mails against an opponent of mine, I would have immediately disavowed it.
We had a couple of people disavow.
Had one of the forums, if I'm correct, Josh Cutler versus Joe Sheehan. It was actually towards the end where actually Josh did ask Joe to disavow, and Joe was like, I can't, for the simple fact that what if, you know, tomorrow I could be a target of a PAC, you know, it's...
But I think what could have happened in that instance was he could say, I can disavow the message. That's what or I could disavow those things that were not accurate in the mailing, because even if you were later the target, you would turn to your opponent and ask the same thing. Will you disavow those things in here that are not accurate?
That's a very good point.
Anybody here feel that those mailers had any effect on that particular race, the 6 Plymouth District
I actually think it ended up hurting the challenger.
I agree.
Absolutely, I do.
Yeah. And, so you think the mail is more so than anything else?
Oh, yeah. I think there were a lot of factors in that race. I thought Josh Cutler did a fantastic job. He ran a very good campaign. He's an incredibly hard worker. He and I have a similarity. I was the first Democratic rep ever elected to my district. X number of years later, he's the first Democrat elected to his district. Mm. Let me tell you, when you do that, you can't be far from the middle. And Josh has worked incredibly hard over the last 2 years. He's everywhere. The old joke about me was that I'd be there for the opening of an envelope. I think Josh hears the envelope being mailed.
Didn't hear that, but
and he's there. So I think that is what people want. They want a representative that works hard and is there. And they are tuning away from the negative advertising. And it's so frustrating, particularly at the local level. I can understand it a little more at the national level, but it's very frustrating. And I thought it was just not a positive for the challenger.
Now, would Tom Coulter disagree with you as far as being as far in the middle? Because you're talking about somebody, Tom Coulter, the Democrat, ran against Tom Coulter, the Republican.
Yes, and Tom Coulter, the Democrat, has declared victory over Tom Coulter, the Republican. So that's one where blue versus red, the blue wins. Well, he's in the office as a Democrat.
From what I understood, they were both on the same line anyway.
So. Were they really?
Although it was, I talked to Tom about that recently, because as you folks know, he's a very good friend, and you guys were talking about that, wondering who would win that debate, and he thought that was a riot. Mm. He has a very good sense of humor that. And, you know, again, there's somebody that works incredibly hard and has been able to reach across the aisle. People that are members of the other party don't automatically want to support someone from the other party, but if you win their confidence and you work hard, that's acceptable on both sides of the aisle. I think you saw that in the state Senate race in Plymouth. You know, there's somebody again, Vinny DiMacedo, who is well known, and I worked with him for 8 of the years I was there.
Correct.
Somebody who's well known as being able to work across the aisle on a lot of issues and garnered support clearly from both sides of the ledger.
Do you want to jump on that? No?
No, I have to.
Well, I think just really quickly going back to the Josh Cutler campaign.
Six Plymouth.
Yeah, the Six Plymouth. I think the one thing that I will say that Josh did exceptionally well, at least here at the debate that we had on Monday Night Talk, is he just articulated the points that he wanted to get out the best out of, I think, any debate that we had here. I really do, because he was able to take some of the big issues that those flyers were mailing out, such as, we'll take the gas tax issue. You know, he stated very well, I voted against the gas tax, but what did you want, a higher tax package? We had to vote in what we were presented, or else it would have gotten bigger. And I talked to a bunch of people in that district and not in that district, and to them, that one statement made sense to them for all of the candidates about that issue. So that, I think that was one of the things.
Everybody
that...
Everybody agree on that?
One of the things Josh does very well is take these big issues and explain them. Yeah. He's very good at that. He's got that skill set. And what was very frustrating for Josh and some of these other folks, I know Josh in particular, Josh had voted against the gas tax. He voted against his leadership against the gas tax in a clear vote, and this outside group was all of a sudden somehow trying to say he didn't do that. And that's where the disingenuous nature of that mailing really was harmful.
I'm just thinking even more so than the negative mailing, the dark money, the negative ads, what effect did it have on races? The fact that Deval Patrick waited until after the election to announce that there's a $324 million shortfall in the state budget.
Well, would there have been a $324 million shortfall if Martha Coakley won?
The $325 million shortfall is still there. They may not have announced it, or I don't know, but it's still there. And why they waited till after the election is obvious. It's the obvious reason why they waited till after the election to announce that.
That's something we can get to in a moment. I want to kind of still stay on, at least on the South Shore, because I want to ask about another very interesting and intriguing race that we had. And it's on the county level. So the county level, and no, it isn't Scott Vecchi versus Sandra Wright. I mean, that was a good ride. I'm talking about the one for Register of Probate.
You mean the debate that I've watched at least 10 times?
It's addictive, isn't it?
It is. It's hilarious.
So it's you. what did you think of that particular race? Was that a race that Matt McDonough won hands down, or one that Tony O'Brien lost?
Both.
Really?
Yeah.
How so?
I mean, I think you could clearly argue that Matt was the most qualified candidate in the race. He articulated the issues, and it was interesting. If you watch some of those debates and listen to the one that was on WATD, Matt kept trying to talk about the job of Register of Probate, and his opponent hardly ever talked about the job of Register of Probate. So I think from who was the most qualified, that came across. However, I think that some of the comments in the debate and some of what you folks saw on TV was detrimental to Match Challenger. I just don't think it played very well.
I've got to be honest with you, and I'm not going to argue on with that race at all, because of the fact that Tony is not an attorney. He didn't really talk about the job of registrar of probate. He ran on numbers. He tried to run a campaign as if he was running to be the most popular without any actual qualifications for the job.
I will say his message must have resonated with someone because he lost by only 3,500 votes.
Well,
of 160,000, 170,000 voters.
First of all, he has a great last name.
How would you know that?
But secondly, it's interesting because I had conversations with a lot of my Republican friends who could not understand, because it was my prediction that ultimately, as we got closer, that Sandy Wright would win for county commissioner and Matt McDonough would win for registrar of probate. And there were folks that just couldn't believe that. How is that possible? Two countywide races very close on the ballot. Mm. Won't the Republicans just vote for the Republicans and the Democrats vote for the Democrats? No.
People actually paid attention.
They did. They got out and they voted for who they felt was the most qualified candidate. Now, did Sandy Wright gain some coattails from Charlie Baker in Plymouth County and from Vinny DiMacedo and Matt Muratori? Yes. But that shows Matt's victory as all the more successful. But it was fascinating. If you look at the town of Marion and you look at the votes for register of probate and the votes for county commissioner, they were identical to the number. However, Sandy got the same number that Matt got, and Tony got the same number that Scott Fecky got. So, it's clear that people voted for the person they wanted in those two races.
I will say, is the one area looking at the register of probate race, the one area that I looked at the numbers over and over was Brockton, because I thought Tony would at least have gained a split in votes, because he's known in Brockton. But he lost by 7,000 votes in Brockton.
Well, I didn't know that.
Again, I don't think it's a surprise.
No. I understand that Brockton is deemed as a Democratic stronghold, so to speak. That's where Democrats do well.
But Joe made the point, and actually Craig did as well. Matt was an attorney. He was qualified to do the job. He actually was, as far as I know, the only candidate in the race that went out and met with other registered of probate and talked to them about exactly what he would be doing. He did exactly what you wanted to do in a race like that. And so I don't know that party played it as much as qualifications.
Yeah, I like Tony. I've known Tony for a lot of years, but he was running for a job that really it wasn't a requirement of the job, but you really need to be an attorney to be the registrar of probate. You can't be a manager trying to manage people. You need to be an attorney.
I think he put up a great argument as far as the manager versus the attorney. I think that, but in the end, the folks in the county felt that you need somebody who was an attorney. Is that how we say it? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think this race shows it shows Tip O'Neill's truism that all politics is local, or at least in this case it is. We'll get to more of that later.
Well, it's funny you mention it, because I actually had I had an argument with someone in regards to the 6th Plymouth District race, and the thought was that the Joe Sheehan was going to be able to take Hanson, because a lot of folks were mobilizing in Hanson for Joe Sheehan, and Joe was going to be able to take Pembroke, which was going to be his hometown, and that Josh would be lucky enough to take Duxbury. And he says, hold on, Josh 2 years ago, when he won the seat, took all three communities. So if I saw it, I would see Josh taking Duxbury and Pembroke, and maybe Joe taking Hanson. Does anybody here know what the results were?
Yeah, Josh won every town.
Yeah. He won every town.
And I think actually every precinct.
I think he won all but one precinct in Pembroke.
Okay.
But what's interesting, and people that make those commentaries and some of our pundits, they don't get close to the ground. The state rep race to this day is still a door-to-door race. Mm. And I had the chance to talk to a lot of people in those towns, and they appreciated the work that Josh Cutler was doing. Many Republicans, many independents, they liked the fact he was there, he was available, he was accessible, he was a breath of fresh air over, I think, some of the previous representatives maybe from that area, and they were supportive of him. It was clear to me that Josh was going to win all three towns, just talking to the people door to door.
Yeah, I'll tell you the same thing happened in the 10th Plymouth. The person that won, I wasn't working for. I didn't want to win. But the reason John Cruz lost is because he didn't do as much door to door. He didn't have the history of service. That's why.
Are you talking about in Brockton?
Yes.
Because he beat Michelle Dubois.
Oh, yeah. In East Bridgewater and West Bridgewater.
East Bridgewater, but handily by 1,600 votes. Nearly 1,600
votes. And lost by over 2,000 in Brockton.
Right.
But then you look at someone like Jeff Deal, who probably may never have a challenger again, because he's out there. working hard, going.
He basically campaigned statewide, even though he was on the side campaigning for his seat.
But it was very interesting because Jeff was very smart, and he let people know he wanted the job, even though he was unopposed. And people like Jeff and people like Josh and, you know, people like me that want the job and are out there with the voters on a regular basis will always do well in elections. And people think, oh, well, it matters on X point or Y point. It really matters that you're doing the job and working hard.
What do you think happened in the 5th Plymouth District race where Rhonda Nyman lost by, well, right now it's, what, 45 votes to Dave DeCoste?
Election night we saw 59, so I don't know.
59,
what it was,
but the paper said 45 now.
Yeah, and I even thought it was down to about 35.
What happened there?
I think that is a factor of a number of different components, not the least of which is Dave DeCoste was working extremely hard, is well known in the town of Norwell, and showed that he wanted to go door to door, and did that on a pretty regular basis in all those communities. I think Rhonda has done a very good job as a state rep. I think she was expecting that people would remember that, but one of the things I've learned is that people's memories are very short, and you need to remind them of the job you've done, and perhaps she didn't get a chance to do that as much as she should have.
And that's something that especially at the local level, every candidate seems to forget. They think they can run a campaign on Facebook or on the internet. You really need to go door-to-door. If you want to win, you need an organization that's going to go out there and hit doors and drop literature. Otherwise, you don't stand a chance.
And, Craig, you were saying, because I didn't get to follow this as closely, that Michelle Dubois, she was the ultimate winner, did that, you thought, more than
She has a history of doing that in Ward 6 in Brockton, and that was out of all the precincts, Ward 6, with four precincts in Ward 6, that was the biggest area. And she had a strong base in the city of Brockton. People know her history. That's why she won Brockton so soundly. John Cruz really needed to spend a lot more time in Brockton if he wanted to make any inroads on that base that she had.
And you felt that he didn't do that.
He spent a lot of time in West Bridgewater and East Bridgewater, not enough in Brockton, which I think is the bulk of the district.
Okay. Let's move things to the state level. I gotta ask first and foremost, we didn't have a chance to necessarily do it, but we, of course, we want to reflect on the moment of the passing of a Boston mayor, former Boston mayor, Tom Menino. One of the things I got to ask is, and something that I've heard rumblings, is they felt that the passing of Tom Menino may have had somewhat of it might have had an effect on the governor's race. True or false?
False.
You know, let's recognize certainly that Tom Menino, the longest serving mayor in the history of the city of Boston, has received national acclaim for the job that he did.
Mm-hmm.
And let's recognize that his passing was not just a statewide moment, but a national moment. Folks from around the country were paying homage and recognizing the work that he had done. And the news cycle stopped for 48 hours. There are some that would believe that because Charlie Baker had a moment, not a good moment, with the fish story, that might have continued. Far be it for me to be one of those pundits, but I can tell you the news cycle stopped, and by the time it restarted, that issue was a dead issue.
So do you think the tear that Charlie Baker shed helped win him the race?
I don't know. It would have if the story were true.
Ooh. How do you respond?
I can neither confirm nor deny, because Charlie can't confirm nor deny. But I think that the whole death of Tom Menino was kind of an excuse by Martha Coakley. She had the race. It was hers to lose. And just like her race against Scott Brown, she lost it. I hope she runs for statewide office again and again.
Do we see her again? Do we see her again?
I hope so.
Well, this is the first time I must take a little bit of an exception with what Craig just said, hers to lose, only because I think every poll up until 3 weeks or 2 weeks before were predicting that Charlie Baker would win. And if you went on Nate Silver's site, he was showing Charlie Baker as the winner. I think the biggest surprise on Election Day was how close Martha Coakley really came to beating Charlie Baker.
That's what I was going to say.
I don't think she was the expected winner at all.
There were some... I mean, I was surprised that it was so close, and I was also surprised about how close question one was. Those are the two big surprises that I saw on Election Day.
I think if you were to ask the people of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts who the winner was going to be the week before, 2 weeks before, everyone would have said Charlie Baker.
Why is that? What was it about Martha Coakley that folks weren't were resonated
well,
by
her.
Well,
here's what's interesting. She still lost in one of the closest gubernatorial elections in the history of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Mm. So there were, I thought the Globe had it great. It said, congratulations, Charlie Baker. And he deserves our congratulations. He ran a very good campaign. But the bottom tagline was, everything had to go right for you to win. And it did. And that's good. Good for Charlie Baker. But I think there were a lot of factors, and one of them, one of 10, one of 15, one of 20, was Tom Menino's passing away at that point in time. So many factors. What's great about pundits is we tend to sit around and say, okay, it was this factor or that factor. It's never one factor. It's a confluence of events.
I'd agree with
that. And that's what happened
One of the things that impressed me about the Baker campaign is I've been involved in Republican politics for about 20 years now, and this is probably the most organized Republican campaign I've seen since Bill Weld. There's been a whole mishmash of clusters, let's say.
Can I borrow that? A mishmash of clusters. I'm going to borrow that.
But should there be a bleep after that?
Yeah, they should. They should. But this was probably the most organized campaign, statewide campaign I've seen since Bill Weld.
Well, let's give Charlie some credit, too, because his ads were very good. I thought Charlie Baker's ads were better than her ads.
Well, there was a 10-second snippet, and I'm not sure if it was a Charlie Baker ad or if it was a PAC ad, where it showed... I don't know how many times it was seen on TV, was with when she was and when Martha Coakley was asked about the gas tax and did not know it. That 10-second snippet, I think, was one of the things that hurt her.
I thought the ads that were better were Charlie Baker going around talking to people. It was him with independents, him with Democrats, him with the Republicans, and thanking them. I mean, I really thought his positive ads were very good. That, I don't think he needed the negative
that
ads.
That ad leading up to Election Day, thanking everyone with his camera full of photos. Oh. That was a fantastic
I thought it was ad. A very good ad.
Yeah, I think he came off as somebody who truly could walk into a legislator that was controlled by the Democrats and actually get something done.
So he reinvented himself from 4 years
exactly.
ago.
Oh, absolutely.
He was the total opposite 4 years ago. 4 years ago, he was unapproachable. Now he's human. He's a big cuddly guy this time around.
So are you calling him a rhino?
No, not at all.
Sure.
But so what? But I mean, so what if he is? That's the point. I think the message he delivered is, so what if I do things that you're not going to like? I just want to get the things done that need to get done.
Well, who's the most successful Republican governor that people would argue in a long time is Bill Weld. And he's considered a rhino by certain members of that party.
Sure,
So if that's what a rhino is, I'm sure Charlie Baker will be happy to be.
So basically, Charlie Baker took a page out of Bill Weld's playbook.
Absolutely,
you know what? It's a lot easier to work with a rhino than with a Democrat. You know that.
Hey, now once again, Craig, you were doing so well. You have to cross the line.
Many
of us Democrats recognize the value of a bipartisan.
But the good thing is we're working on a few things that we hope to have a sympathetic ear from the governor from the corner office. We want to stop Common Core. There's a few things that we want to make sure that we get through.
Go ahead, Stuart.
What is the difference between what happened in the governor's race and what happened with all the other constitutional officers where the Democrats won handily?
There were absolutely no no campaigns. I mean, well, I can't say there were absolutely no campaigns. They just weren't. The state party put their efforts all into the governor's race, and I don't think we had candidates who really expected to win.
You're saying that Patricia St. Aubyn wasn't a viable, good, viable candidate to go against Suzanne Bump? You're saying that John Miller wasn't good enough against Maura Healey? Talk to me.
Craig's saying that.
You know what's funny? I think one of the major things that the reason that happened from my perspective is that we had a lot of Democrat officers as Bump and Grossman that were really getting a lot of good stuff done before the election.
I've still got to take issue with Suzanne Bump. It's nice that we ran two actual auditors against her last two election cycles, and the real auditor is lost to the one who's learning on the job.
So what's interesting, I'm just going to add a different thought in, which is I think the difference is money. Charlie Baker's campaign and the PACs and the other groups and organizations outspent Martha Coakley 5-1 or 6-1 in the last week.
And in
the other races, they didn't spend any money.
No, well, they didn't have the money.
And, well, I would disagree. I think if you'd put some of the money that you were spending on the governor's race down to one of these other races that might have been a little closer, it might have made a bit of a difference. But it comes to money. I love that John Stewart
segment. So basically the money wasn't evenly dispersed amongst the other...
No, not at all. Yeah, and, okay. But I think the risk is, now that we have have an incumbent governor, we maybe we can focus on some constitutional offices. But the risk is that this election was so close. If we didn't spend as much money and energy on that governor's race, we may not have won.
I'm going to ask last question on the governor's race before we take our 7 o'clock break, and that is, do you feel the sins that were on the plate of Deval Patrick, and we're talking about all the issues with DCF and with the welfare, welfare with the EBT cards, all the issues we saw with DCF, DTA, do you feel that was what that hurt Martha Coakley and the Democrats running for that office?
My answer would be no.
Really?
I've explained how I see this race having come out. I thought they both ran good campaigns. Mm. Both Martha Coakley and Charlie Baker ran good campaigns. Neither of them was terribly exciting. It was very hard. I talked to Republicans who weren't excited about Baker, and I talked to Democrats who weren't excited about
Coakley. People didn't get excited or charged up for 2 weeks before, right?
And some people didn't get charged up until they went into the polling booth. And what surprised me, I talked to three town clerks who told me they had people coming in and didn't know who they were voting for governor. That's unheard of in this kind of a race. So I believe the difference was twofold. One, money, and two, Charlie Baker was able to change his persona to his benefit.
And I think... There was no real connection between Deval Patrick and Martha Coakley. There was no effort to make that connection because it would have been false. People would have seen through that.
You had a Democrat who's in office. It was the first Democrat in 16 years who became a two-term governor.
If Deval campaigned more with Martha Coakley, if he was out there, if he was a face of the campaign,
she would have got the residual.
Yes, we could have made that connection, and it wouldn't have been as close last Tuesday.
We're going to come back and have more red versus blue with the county treasurer, Thomas O'Brien, and of course, Craig Pina, right after this message. You are listening to Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.
Here we go. We're back. More Monday Night Talk here. More red versus blue. Of course, we have a little commercial break banter here that we kind of bled into this particular segment. And we're shifting gears. Again, we have in studio, we have County Treasurer Thomas O'Brien, fondly known as Tom, former state representative, and Ward 1 Chairman, Republican,
I'm moving down.
In Brockton, former City Committee Republican Chairman.
Now, Kevin, you didn't mention that I'm also an Eagle Scout.
That's your problem.
Oh, me too.
Well, I know because Joe
is. We have a walkway we need to have.
And Craig was in Scouts, right?
Years and years ago.
That was Jeff Teal.
Yes. Yes, I knew that. And Mike Rush, for whatever that matters.
Just think.
So Joe Rossi, Tom O'Brien, Jeff Deal, and Mike Rush.
It wasn't.
We could solve a lot of problems.
No, wait.
Matt McDonough. Do not forget Matt McDonough.
Oh, that's
Matt
true. McDonough.
Yes. Yes. Hold on. I brought it up. You forgot.
I know, but if I don't forget, it makes me look better. So here's the thing, Kevin. This just shows how old I am.
All about Tom.
I was elected state representative, and Matt McDonough got his Eagle Scout that year. I was there for his Eagle Scout ceremony. So,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough.
What year was it?
It's tough. I'm not saying. Go ahead. What's your question, Kevin?
All right. So let's before we look at things at the national level, because a lot happened on election night nationally, and it was more than just the Senate race between Gene Shaheen and Scott Brown. But I want to touch upon the ballot questions. Any particular interest in regards whether it was the repealing the indexing of the gas tax or the casino, what did you feel, or maybe even the bottle bill, what do you guys feel was the more controversial issue that...
I was shocked that the question one was so close. I thought it was the biggest no-brainer on the ballot.
You had individuals who were out there saying that, I mean, you look at what AAA was putting out there for a commercial saying, my God, our roads and bridges, they're going to crumble, but is that true?
No.
Well, just, I think...
I mean, there's already something in play. From what I had heard from the opponents was, there's already a transport... We already have things, infrastructure in place, and there's already money being,
We already spend three times the national average per mile.
So I think the reason it was so close was money. I think AAA and some of the other organizations spend a lot of money.
Right.
It goes to money and politics. Joe said it best earlier when he was talking about Josh Cutler. Josh articulated that issue very well, the best I'd heard on the campaign. And he was saying, listen, we voted for a gas tax, and his belief was that the legislature, if they wanted to increase it, should have to vote for it. That makes common sense. So the only reason it was close is because the other side spent a ton of money.
Right. Mm. Yeah, I think if you really had to ask most legislators, they really didn't want an automatic gas tax. I mean, I think having to vote on it puts them in a tough legislative decision, you know, because you have to vote on a gas tax increase, but it's nothing they haven't been doing for the last, you know, X number of years. I mean, they have to vote on a gas tax increase all the time.
Sure.
I mean, it comes up every time.
It's one of the tax increases that is the most easily explained to your constituency.
Yes.
Because you're using it for roads and bridges. So you're taxing a product that allows you to drive on the roads and bridges that you're using that tax for. It's only if that money doesn't go to roads and bridges that you have a problem with
the
tax.
General fund.
Yeah. One of the most difficult things to explain for me was when I was on the Water Commission in Brockton and the rates hadn't been increased in 20 years and we had to vote on a 60% increase. I'm still explaining that, and that was 6-7 years ago.
You're no longer on the board. Good call.
I mean, was anybody else surprised? I wasn't, but I think some people were, at the size of the vote against the bottle bill.
No, I was surprised it was so the spread was so large. But again, I don't think the other side spent a lot of money on it.
And yeah,
it's a good possibility.
Yeah.
And then how about the casino vote?
Same thing.
Very interesting. Well, all I kept hearing was jobs.
Yeah,
jobs.
Yeah. Jobs. Yeah.
But
jobs.
Which side spent the most money?
The unions.
No, I don't think that's true.
You don't think the unions did?
No,
I think the actual casinos.
I think the
casinos. Agreed.
Sure.
Here it was, you had both the casinos, which may be looking at a different side, as your typical union voter, and they're both on the same side of this one issue.
And if you look at it, question four, there wasn't a lot of money going out from small business owners, because there is, other than the NFIB and Chambers of Commerce, which really didn't fund this at all. I think that there was no money, there was no effort into the No on 4 campaign.
So if you look at it from a legislative standpoint, four ballot questions, I find it fascinating, having been there. The legislature was essentially supported on the bottle bill in the casino, and they were repudiated on the gas tax and on earned sick time. So if you're looking at it from a progressive or conservative issue, they were actually repudiated on perhaps one progressive issue and one conservative issue.
I think the bottlers, I think the soda companies, I think they were the ones who pushed to have that bottle bill killed, basically.
And supermarkets, they were huge spenders in the advertising.
You know, one of the great things about our system here is we have a representative democracy, and I know that sometimes it gets frustrating, but having been up there for 10 years, I can tell you, we do listen to our constituency, and the reps listen to their constituency, and the senators listen to their constituency. And more often than not, surprise, 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 they get it right. And more often than not, when it gets put to a ballot, the people agree with their elected officials.
Again, we're doing Red versus Blue with Tom O'Brien and Craig Pina. Last thing, we just got a couple of minutes left here, gentlemen. Looking at what has happened, we now have the Congress and the Senate. The U.S. Senate being controlled by Republicans. How do you guys see the next 2 years going in regards to the president? Will it force the president to work harder with these
The president's going to have to work an awful lot harder, because over the past 6 years, what we've seen is the Republican-controlled House has passed infinite more bills than the Democrat Senate, and all of a sudden President Obama is going to have all these bills on his desk that he's going to have to make a decision on. He didn't have to do that before, and he can't go around saying the Republicans are the party of no when it's the Republicans that passed all these bills. So it's going to be interesting to see how he handles this.
My favorite response to that question was an editorial cartoon I saw, and I wish I could give it attribution, but I can't remember who it was. It was a picture of President Obama at his desk with the media there, and he says, "I look forward to working with the Republican Party now that they control both branches of the legislature." And I thought that was, I chuckled out loud, or LOL, as they might say. It's true. Of course he's going to work with them. What we have to hope is that the Republican Party recognizes an opportunity and is reasonable about that opportunity. Threats of government shutdown aren't going to work.
Right.
So they can't go to the extreme. You need the more moderate, mainstream component of the Republican Party to seize the day and to put things reasonably in front of the president, and he won't have a choice but to sign one.
I think two things. First of all, if John Boehner and Mitch McConnell say they want to truly work together with the president, Rush Limbaugh says they should do everything to stop the president in any way and not work with him at all. I think if you take the Boehner-McConnell tactic, you're way more effective than if you take the Limbaugh tactic. So I think we're the reasonable side will win out on that one. And I think the second thing is that from a political standpoint, if the Republicans want to have a chance at the White House in 2016, they have to work with the president and actually do compromise
There are things that Republicans can and should take a stand on. It's like amnesty. They should dig their heels in on that one and not.
What about ACA? What about the ACA? Do we see any movement on that?
Well, the Supreme Court might end that. We have to see what the Supreme Court decision is going to be on that.
I just think that reasonable heads will come through even now and nothing. I think there may be changes in the positive direction, but I don't think there'll be a complete repeal. No, there won't be. There will not be a
full repeal. Was this a shift in the Republican Party away from the Tea Party? Was there more moderates in the Republican...
There were more, quote, Tea Party Republicans elected to the legislature.
Is that
scary, though? No. Sure? I'm a Tea Party Republican.
Oh, okay.
Well, I actually think it is, because I think what Joe said earlier is spot on. If they recognize the need to work with the president and do some reasonable pieces of legislation, that will benefit the Republican Party now and in 2016. And honestly, I think Charlie Baker and Barack Obama should talk to each other every day, because they've got the same situation and they need to figure out how to work with the other
sitting
side.
Here listening to you, my gut always wants Ted Cruz to be the Senate president. But my gut tells me that, but using my mind, you have to moderate that, and you have to get this done.
Who do we see? Who are the front runners for 2016? Democrat or Republican?
Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush.
You really think so?
Absolutely.
Can this country do another Bush?
I think this country is going to be fascinated and enamored of a Clinton-Bush re-election effort.
Chris Christie is built for New Jersey and will stay
and
there.
Chris Christie will not do it. Yeah.
He's like a bridge gainer.
I think a current governor like Scott Walker could make a lot of noise in the Republican Party. What's that?
Rick Perry?
Rick Perry?
No.
He's built for Texas. He'll stay in Texas. I think, it's interesting. Chris Christie, something that we haven't heard a lot about, is he has a lot of baggage with the Sandy piece, which hasn't even started to come national yet. There are people down there, a lot of them, who have not received their grant money or funds from the federal government, and he is blocking that from happening. So there's some stuff that is going to come out pretty soon about
Chris,
that.
Chris Christie's got some baggage. Hillary's got a ton of baggage, too.
So we don't see Mitt Romney go for a third time. There's no other Democrat on the horizon that we see. Do we see Joe Biden say, hey, I'm going to try this?
Here's what I hope.
I'm going to do the Mondale?
Here's what I hope. One thing the Republicans are very good at is getting around a candidate and avoiding primaries. They're excellent at it. And I think that if any Democrat has a chance to learn from that Republican playbook, it's Hillary Clinton. And I already see a trend where people are talking about it. Any name that comes up, it's compared to who? Hillary Clinton. Mm. And so I really see an opportunity for
you
the Democrats.
You don't see Benghazi haunting her?
Not in the least.
Even Joe Rossi agrees with me.
I
thought that was good.
From simply an analytical standpoint, I think that she can do the same thing that Coakley did with Deval, and she can distance herself from what happened in her position as at the White House. I think she can.
She has Secretary of State. She can't escape Benghazi, just like she can never escape Whitewater.
Things that will never happen that I wish would is Condoleezza Rice running for president.
And wouldn't that be an interesting race? Clinton versus Rice.
But Condoleezza Rice would be a shoe-in, but that she's
you would know that you would at least have your first female president.
But I don't think the Republican Party could ever elect her.
Oh, I definitely think we could. But she doesn't want to run.
Let's save this for a debate on another day. I think we try to get you gentlemen back in either in December or January, do another red versus blue. I think it's better.
Well, it's going to be blue versus red, and we need an hour. Come on, Ken. We already talked about this.
Okay, you buy the pizza and beer.
You've got to redo the Rock'em Sock'em Robot. So his head's on it,
not the other guy. Yeah. We might do that. But I want to thank both of you. Both of you gentlemen were fantastic in making your points and talking about what we saw just a week ago.
Well, Kevin, it was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me. I'll do my best to come back. And thanks to Joe.
We'll give you an hour next time.
Yeah, please. Thanks to Joe. And what are we going to give Craig? and thanks to Joe.
You know, he makes a good point.
And thanks to Joe and to Stu for serving as co-host. And Craig, of course, other than the dig at the Democratic Party, I thought you did a great job.
Well, it was great to sit here with the treasurer. And now that I know, I can call him Nucky anytime I want. That's great.
Never said that. I think Dan Pilata wants to be Nucky.
After you get some milk and the goats. We're going to step aside. When we come back, we're going to speak with children's book author Sarah Albee. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.